Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 4, season 13, I believe. Thank you, by the way, so far to all the people who have emailed in trying to guess what the rally car is, of course, in the Kielder ad. We've still got another couple of weeks before we reveal it. So, I reckon most wrong answers at the moment. Mostly wrong answers we've received at the moment. And I was going to give you the clue, and Ryan Champion said last week not to do it. So, blame Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, did I say that? I thought I gave you a clue to give, eventually.
You did eventually, yeah. It was a very... Yeah. You did in fairness, but it was a very, very tough clue.
Jack, but you don't want to make it easy, do you?
No, fair dues. Jack Bengen, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right. We've just been reading your fan club on Twitter, actually. It's quite interesting following. There you go. How are you keeping?
I'm good, thank you. I always like to, you know, be the popular one of the group.
So. You are most definitely. You see, you used to be the hare. Now you're the whipping boy, so to speak.
Well, no comment there.
I was just about to say, I've seen the videos. Boys, it's the top of the show, and we always try to get some kind of order. We got God bless Gary Boyd. Are you ready for this?
I don't think we're ever ready for what Gary comes out with.
I'm trying to get it in the right order. Rethinking. Oh.
Is it in response to last week's question I think one of us posed to Gary about the power stage?
I think he answered that, in fairness.
He did answer that on social media. I just wondered if you were going to read that one out or if it was something else.
Well, this one, it was... this one was rethinking the points. Just 0.8 of a second could have us looking at this year's Drivers' Championships as much of a closer battle. Thierry Neuville is currently 21 points ahead of Sebastian Ogier in the drivers' title chase, but consider this, 0.7 second victory in Rally Sardinia could have easily gone Ogier's way. If Thierry had just been 0.8 of a second slower and Seb just 0.8 of a second faster on any stage in Sardinia, then Seb Ogier would have 7 points more and Thierry would have 7 points less, and the gap between them would be just 7 points. If Thierry goes on to win the driver's title by 14 points or less, we will all look back on what 0.7 in Sardinia as the most significant 0.7 in WRC history. Boom!
I like it. Good
that's
work,
strong.
Guy,
that's maths as well, isn't it? That's what I like about that. That's maths. I'm impressed by that. Thank you, Gary Boyd. This is what I like about Gary. He's already sent me next week's, by the way, which he's asked me not to read out. So I've already got next week's in the can. So there you go. I that was impressive, Matt. All the people genuinely who have entered the competition, it is great to get the emails as well. And you've said some very, very nice things. We also get emails, or rather, we've had one email in... How long have we been doing this now, boys? How long's Absolute Rally? 3 years, maybe?
It's not far off 3 years I've been involved.
I think
it feels like about 10.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, it does to me as well, right? I have to ring you every week. Don't forget, that's me ringing you as well. But we had a bit of an email in, and all joking aside, it was kind of one of those ones where you go, ooh. Now, it's somebody who feels that we've been quite biased with regards to some of our views on drivers. I don't think we are. I think we tend to be... we try not to be UK-centric. We'll always try and support drivers, and we always try and support drivers who come on as well. But we had one with regards to our bias, a little bit of, or I'm not even, basically, I'm trying to paraphrase it as best as possible, but basically, boys, it's with regards to Elvin Evans. Do a bit of spell check next time you send us a message about Elvin. I'm just going to read the first part, and you can see how it's going to go. When will you Poms face up to the fact that poor old Elvin just hasn't got it? M Sport would be better off signing somebody else. Hayden Paddon springs to mind. I don't think Hyundai New Zealand will pay for Ford, but still. Let's face reality. Evans hasn't got consistent speed. I'm sick of your bias towards him. Face facts. If Evans had D-Mac tyres, which are considerably better, he is competitive. I have to take issue with that bit.
Can you see where the email's come from? It's like what country it's come from?
It's come from Australia, I'm guessing.
Okay.
Or New Zealand. Who calls Poms? It'd be Australia, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's got boys in Australia. Peter Witten, let me know. Dean Herridge, let me know. And anybody in New Zealand, let us know. Gary Boyd, you're in New Zealand. I can understand the first part of it, but to kind of say across the board that the D-Mac tyre was the deciding factor and is a much better tyre than the Michelin tyre.
What was he just, plain devil's advocate, was he saying that Elvin was only fast when the D-Mac was a better tyre? What he's trying to say?
Face facts, if Evans has D-Mac tyres which are considerably better, he is competitive.
So what he's trying to say is that on the rallies where the D-Macs were superior. Is that what he's trying to say?
I'm not convinced that he is.
Okay. I was only trying to see some reason in it.
No, I can't see any reason in it. But everybody is entitled to their opinion. We're entitled to our opinion. We share our opinions. And by all means, if you want to tell us we're wrong. That's fine. And that's what it's all about. And by all means, if you want to share opinions with us, why won't we say, please, obviously send them in. Possibly with a nicer subject line than that one would be lovely. wasn't very nice subject line, bless. But there you go. But thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts. And anyway, there you go.
Tell you what, considering we're a bunch of biased poms, why don't we put this out to the Absolute Rally listeners? Tweet us in what you think about that message. Are we biased towards Elvin Evans?
Or are we biased towards any driver? I don't think we're biased towards any driver, although somebody did point out apparently that you were overly nice to Gus last week.
I saw that.
But hang on a minute. In our defence, I know we do go out to all different countries, but why shouldn't we be a little bit biased towards British drivers?
There's no rule.
I'm not being funny, but I might be a little bit biased.
I guess we always will be, and I guess we've got a relationship, and we've all had a relationship probably with somebody like Elvin throughout his career. We've all interacted with him, and I suppose it's all the drivers we interact with. Yeah.
And like you said, drivers that support the show, and we all have our personal favourites.
I think for me though, that comes from, like you said about Elvin, Tony, it just because we've watched him so much, it means we've got so much insight into his career and what's happened. So there's a lot of misconceptions out there about things that happen in a positive way and a negative way. And when you get to see those things, sort of hands on, then it gives you a much better sort of idea about how good the driver is.
Yeah, no, I love that. That was very succinctly put. Well done, Jack. Well done,
thanks.
Jack. I felt like we kind of needed to do the admin at the top of the program. Normally it's just Gary Boyd, but we had an email to read out.
Can I also point out that last week I suggested that Hayden Paddon was the driver to take from Hyundai rather than Andreas Mikkelsen, therefore rating Hayden Paddon above Andreas Mikkelsen last week.
Yeah, I know.
Which I'd say is pretty. That's pretty flat out from me to put my.
Absolutely, Jack. You are preaching to the bias choir.
Yeah, but the listeners are, I think they need to.
No, I think
they need to listen to how brilliant I am and how terribly wrong this person is.
Oh dear, I can't wait to see Twitter go mad with your new fan club next week with this one. Ryan
that,
Champion.
That was definitely put for humour purposes.
You know the emoji's going to be with me and Ryan Champion, don't you? Just that one where somebody's just sat there eating popcorn. You realise that's what's coming, don't you?
That's what I do before you start recording the programme, and you two are taking chunks out of each other from being from Merseyside and Yorkshire, and I just sit here listening to you.
We don't ever do that, Jack.
No, we don't. Well, we never take to Twitter. We never take to Twitter to send each other gifts all night. We never. It never happens. Anyway, we're meant to be talking about rallying, boys, because that's what Absolute Rally is. Of course it is. We've been called Absolute lots of things, so let's just stick to Absolute Rally. Anyway, Jack Benyon, we're gonna refer to your fantastic paper today, and a story which I was quite excited about, but there's also a part of me that thinks it's massively wishful thinking. It's the boss of Toyota, Mr. Toyota, getting very passionate about getting the Japanese teams going again. Obviously, going back to the 90s and stuff like that, where we had obviously Mitsubishi, Subaru, and Toyota. And it's kind of on his wish list, Jack.
Yeah, it's a little bit speculative, but it's Toyota basically saying that the results of a potential rally in Japan, which is what we could have next year if the candidate event goes well, could attract some more of these Japanese manufacturers to come back. And we always remember the Mitsubishi and Subaru era as one of the best, don't we? So that to see that would be great. I think it's Yeah, it's a bit of a push. I think Mitsubishi, from a road car point of view, are very interested in hybrid technology. So I think they would need some of that involved in motorsport to get involved. And you know, we've seen Subaru pull away from motorsport sort of worldwide, haven't we? So it's an interesting one. There's no words from Mitsubishi or Subaru in this story, but the fact that we could have a rally in Japan is a very good thing for that.
Right, obviously, somebody who owns two cars, ironically, from both of those marks. As ever, always good to go to somebody you'd like to think was know what they're talking about. My gut feeling is that these brands have massively moved on and we're never, ever going to see them back in rallying.
I think we touched on it last week, didn't we? Ironically, I'm sure we touched on it, talking about both Mitsubishi and Subaru. You know, it was obviously great when they were in the World Championship. And I mean, Mitsubishi in particular, they seem to have put all of the motorsport behind them. Evo production stopped. Rally Art's gone as a brand. So it would be difficult to see that. Subaru is probably still wishful thinking, but Subaru do spend an awful lot of money on motorsport through America. I mean, obviously America is their biggest market. I think Subaru Japan own Subaru America. Could be wrong. Somebody will tell me, I'm sure. But, it is, I suppose, possible, but I think we'd have to see some more rallies in America before that happened. And I think we're a long way off seeing WRC rounds in the US. Having said that, Toyota, I think, own about 16 or 17% of Subaru.
Okay.
So is Toyota-san just, you know, gently pushing Subaru in that direction? I'd love to say yes, and probably the reality is no. But they do spend a lot of money on motorsport, albeit in America. I can't see the WRC being anything like high enough profile in America for them to transfer that budget. But I think it's unlikely. But like I said, there are connections between Toyota and Subaru. Obviously, we saw the collaboration between the GT86 and the BRZ. So they do talk, they do collaborate, and there is shares owned by Toyota. But I think it's fanciful, but let's follow it and see what happens.
There was that mega video though, wasn't there? That another video that Mark Higgins did with the car that he did the TT in. Was it on the road to Romania?
Yes, that's right.
A couple of weeks ago now, and again, obviously that's paid for by America, I'm led to believe. So they are stretching their legs into Europe, and of course we know what they've done with the Rallycross program and things like that. But you just look at the model range as well, I guess, and there's just not a model range that lends itself to WRC. Funnily enough, we regurgitated a little bit of a story with friend of the show Dean Herridge, the XV, I think it is, vehicle that Subaru have produced. They're doing something for safari type events over in Australia. Our lovely friends at Kiel that have also got involved with that program now, and you know, local importers seem to be doing their own thing. Obviously, we know what Molly does as well with Subaru over there with Rally as well. But as you say, on the grand scale, you just don't see them coming along and going to a Pro Drive or somebody else again and kind of going right builders world rally car.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will probably be aware of this, but it does kind of take us back to how Toyota-san got involved with Tommy Mäkinen in the first place, because Tommy Mäkinen built Toyota-san a four-wheel drive GT86, and it was four-wheel drive because it had Subaru running gear. It was four-wheel drive, turbocharged, Impreza running gear in a GT86.
Yeah. Jack, you know, we were all fans of that particular era, but as Raz just said, no Mitsubishi, Subaru, don't see it. It is just a rosy-coloured spectacle one, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. You know, it's always good when countries get events. It makes sort of brings them into the perspective of their customers, which is what they're aiming for. So there's always that opportunity that you might attract a few Japanese manufacturers out by having an event there. But that being said, I'm not convinced Subaru or Mitsubishi are the right manufacturers for that. Like we said earlier, I think Mitsubishi would need some sort of leadership change because they're very clearly working towards hybrid. Well, not working towards. They do sell a lot of hybrid cars. I think actually Mitsubishi sell more hybrid cars than they do. Are they all hybrid cars now, actually? Mitsubishi.
Ryan Champion, over to you.
either all of their models or the majority of their models are hybrid now, and they're not interested in motorsport at all. So there would need to be some sort of leadership change there. And as Ryan said, I think for me, Japan isn't the big thing for Subaru. It's America. That's where the money's being spent, and we're a little way off having an event there, I think. So yeah, I think those two are the wrong manufacturers, but you never know. An event in Japan might attract some manufacturers out.
We will see. We will see.
And I don't think an L200 is a hybrid, come to think of it. So,
no, I've got one, to be fair. And it's
still solid?
Yeah, I've got one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
mega thing, to be honest with you. Very agricultural, but it's got leather interior and a sat nav and everything. I'm quite happy people about in the L200.
Still got the sat nav in it, has it?
Yes, Ryan Champion, it's still got a sat nav in it. Now, I know, I realise to you over in your neck of the woods, a sat nav's probably just a map. So,
We're gonna get a reader writing in. I'm in mode here. A listener writing in to criticise you for being biased towards Mitsubishi because you own one and that Subaru are actually far better.
No, well, Ryan owns both, so I think we can quite comfortably talk about the brands. I think.
Well, he doesn't suit the agenda of the writer who's written in. So.
Okay. All right. Fine. All right. Move on then.
Right. Ryan doesn't count.
Move on then. A little bit of admin again, boys. I was with, I know this video has gone out now kind of all over the world, and obviously because of the promoter being behind the BRC and the promoter around behind Wales Rally GB, obviously the same people. But did you see this video, Jack Benyon of the Fiesta going down the through the slate mine on the zip world zip wire? It's mega. I know a little bit about what went on because I was with Matt a couple of weeks before, well, probably about a month or so before it all happened, when he was building the car, because Matt who actually built the car to do it. And they wanted so much of the car to be retained. It was, I know it was a little bit of a stress for him, but nice little bit of PR.
Yeah, absolutely. And a very good thing to open up rallying to you know, the area, if you like. A lot of the local regional newspapers who cover it, I know. So that's really good, and one of those things that we're always harping on about, isn't it, that we need to be doing more things that brings rallying into a, you know, a more mainstream perspective, and things like this are brilliant for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan, would you fancy going down a zip line in a rally car?
No, not particularly in the rally car, thanks.
No, I didn't think you would.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport. Developed from hands-on knowledge that you only get in the service park, not the boardroom. Kielder create products for their own use and like-minded people. Those inspired by mechanical motion and engineering. Plus, exclusively for Absolute Rally listeners, use discount code RALLY for 10% off at www.kielder.co. Simply search Kielder Tools online.
I tell you what, Jack Benyon, is it you that's put that lovely picture up of the ex-Possumborn Subaru with Alistair McRae? Is that,
no,
would you choose that picture?
No, it wasn't. No, David Evans sent that in.
Okay, mega picture. Great to see Alistair there. Obviously, Ryan Champion was drunk with him the other week. So, but by all accounts, he's going to be doing an event going up against Hayden in the AP4 car, and it's going to be an interesting one, isn't it, to say the least, Jack Benyon.
Yeah, it's the Ashley Forest Rally Sprint is the event, and it's far from the original Subaru that Possumborn drove. I think it's got about 600 brake horsepower, isn't it, or maybe more. So it's meant for tarmac usually, I think, but it's going to be driving it on gravel. So yeah, I'm sure Ryan knows a lot more about that car than me. But nice to see Alistair doing some things like this and staying relevant, if you like.
I can't believe, Ryan Champion, that you didn't get Alistair McRae on the podcast when he was over. Really can't. Really can't.
He was on here briefly, but that's not to say that we can't in the future from down under. It might be the middle of the night. But
come from a land down under. Don't. I've been up since 4:30 this morning working on a project, on a rally project in Australia, in Darwin, and I had to be up at that time because, yeah, so I can do it. I've done it today. So if we can get Alistair McRae, I'll get up very early in the morning to do it. I don't mind doing that. But do you know a little bit about it? I'll be honest, right, I realise now I'm going to get myself into serious trouble with Ryan Champion. But I do love a two-door Subaru, Ryan Champion.
No, that's fair enough. So do I. I think it was, you know, when it came out, it was a stunning looking World Rally car. and they still are. And like you said, I think that one's been pretty highly modified. I think it's over 700 horsepower now, and I guess like all the wheel rally cars, if you start taking restrictors out, you can suddenly produce a significant amount more power. But pretty special car, and I'm sure on gravel with 700 plus horsepower, that'll be an awful lot of fun.
Could be. We will watch that. We'll see whether we can get somebody from down there to maybe our friends at Rally Sports or whatever, because they normally cover all that stuff. We'll see if we can get Peter on or something, or maybe record something from down there for when it's going on. Anyway, a couple of other bits and pieces. I do love this, by the way. Jack, Finland organisers want to lure Tanak fans over. They want to get more Estonians over for Rally Finland next year.
Yeah, I think they'll struggle.
I think they were all there, weren't they?
Yeah. Apparently, there was about 15,000 fans that came from Estonia to watch Rally Finland. So that's pretty impressive as it is. Unbelievable number of Estonians coming over, and it's not too much of a bad journey for those guys, sort of geographically. So there's no reason why they can't attract more fans, and you know, it's great to have that atmosphere there, isn't it? You know, it doesn't matter. For me, being unbiased, it doesn't matter what drive you've got in what country. If they're on their home event and there's a load of home fans, it creates a fantastic atmosphere. And that was clear to see on Rally Finland, even if it wasn't, even if it wasn't a Finnish driver, it was Oik Tanak, who's Estonian. It was good to see, you know, the support that he got. And I think any sort of improvement of getting more home fans is only going to be good for the atmosphere of the event.
Right. Is that why, probably, and all joking aside, and I know we addressed it at the top of the program, is that perhaps why maybe sometimes people do see us a little bit biased? Because that's what we want, isn't it? That's what we want to generate. That's what we want here in the UK. We rightly or wrongly, and it's probably wrongly to everybody outside of the UK, but we do feel like rallying is ours, and we want more, and we want, you know, we obviously make a podcast about it, but you know, how often do you find yourself still trying to convert people and go, no, you really need to see this, you really need to watch this? And having somebody, Estonia is a very small country, but having somebody like Oik going over to Finland and doing that, that's what we want, isn't it? That's why we're so passionate about it.
Yeah, of course it is. And you know, we grew up with sampling that. You know, we waited a long time to have anybody at the forefront of WRC. You know, back in the day, Roger Clark was always our famous rally winner, and we waited for the next one. And was it going to be Tony Pond? Was it going to be David Llewellyn? Was it going to be Jim McRae? And obviously, it was a long time actually before Colin came along and won at world championship level, and then very quickly after we had of course Richard Burns. So we lived through a fantastic sort of 10 years of British drivers being at the forefront of WRC, and then we saw a little bit of a dip, and we hoped that it would be Chris or Guy Wilkes, and Chris took a long time to get there. But yeah, of course, that's what we get excited about, is British drivers at the forefront going to places like Finland and trying to compete. And like you said, somewhere like Estonia, they had it with Marco Martin again, you know, going back nearly 15 years ago now, I guess. And for them to have Oik to support now is fantastic. And you know, we I guess for a country like Finland, they're used to having, albeit we've talked about this over the last couple of weeks, they've had a bit of a dip, but they're used to having frontline world championship drivers. And we on the other hand have had it and want it again, and that's why we want to see Elvin doing well, and that's why we'd love to see Chris Meek back in the car at the front.
Absolutely. That's just reminded me of something, obviously, talking about the Finland-Estonia thing. Boys, did I dream this, that Gazoo are moving over to Estonia from Finland?
I think I read the same thing as you.
Yeah, which, you know, rightly or wrongly, people did jump on the bandwagon a little bit and go, you know, and we all joked about it, of course, because we've seen the rally cars pulling out of the workshop, driving to service as opposed to going on a truck. And, you know, they test within, you know, obviously with the testing limitations that they have, they're testing effectively on the same roads as Rally Finland. Are they going to be affected next year? Joking aside, will they be affected by moving over to Estonia, do you think, Jack?
I think it's difficult to say, really. I don't know if they'll still be able to. I don't think they'll be able to test in Finland anymore. But their car's pretty well sorted. And also, we saw on Rally Estonia that Oik was pretty dominant there, and he didn't make anywhere near as many changes to his car as Hayden and Craig on their cars in that event. So you know, Estonia proved to be quite a good test for Rally Finland in the end, and proved to be fairly representative. All the drivers were surprised at the end of it, you know, how good it was. So if they can use some of the same stages that Rally Estonia used, then it might not be such a problem for them.
I wonder if it is a wholesale move, though, because it would be very surprising for Tommi Mäkinen to move everything, because they built quite a facility, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, when they built the Toyota Gazoo setup. And sure. I did read somewhere, you know, about the cars not going back to Finland for rebuilds. So is it a logistic move?
Sorry, right. I just wonder that, you know, we talked about, obviously, the second tier team, obviously, with the Japanese drivers. That's run by Marco Martin Motorsport. So the R5 Fiestas and everything they've ever run for those guys, I think, has come out of Marco Martin. And I just wonder whether maybe it's swallowing up a little bit of what Marco Martin's doing, and maybe doing, you know, working with him a little bit more over there. Don't know. I'm purely speculating on that one. If someone wants to put me straight, by all means, put me straight. But maybe that's feasible. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe, you know, they're working a little bit closer together with Marco.
Yeah, it could well be. Like I said, I'd be surprised if they're giving up Finland completely, but maybe like you said, they're just expanding their facility there. Yeah, so I'm sure somebody will know. And
we'll find out. We'll find out. We'll ask somebody who we know. I'll find out from somebody.
We'll ask somebody who actually knows something rather than just making it up as we are. Right,
yeah. Clearly, we're just making stuff up now. We're just making stuff up, boys. It was obviously.
Did you also see in that? I think in that same comment that Tommi Mäkinen Racing made 8.3 million euros or whatever it was last year. That was a nice little profit.
I was just about that. But here's the thing, right, and this is, again, we're purely speculating. We'll get into trouble for this. But I assume that must be purely from what they're, you know, simple mathematics of what they're invoicing out to Toyota to what they're paying out, and that's what's left.
I guess so.
I don't know. I don't know. It's not by coin, is that? I wouldn't mind being a penny behind them. Let's put it that way. Jack Bengen, before we go any further, have you got anything else before we go headlong into any other business you want to get off your chest?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, okay. That's all right. Ryan Champion, before we go headlong into any other business?
No, I don't think so.
No, okay. That's fine. I've got a funny feeling we could all be on relatively the same page on any other business this week.
Okay.
We'll see. Shall I start?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'll start. I was going to mention Colin's 50th.
Okay.
Obviously, Colin McRae would have been 50 this week, and as ever, when these very sad anniversaries come around, they do kind of make you look back at old videos and things and reading stories. And obviously, I know David Evans has wrote a column this week dedicated to Colin, talking about Colin and his take on things, obviously being very close. Read a very nice thing that Colin Clark wrote as well, obviously with his relationship that he'd had. And I spoke to various other people as well who work with Colin, and it's eerie. I still find it really eerie to kind of talk about him in this sense, really, because in many ways the legend does grow, doesn't it, Ry? You know as well as I do, you're probably going to tell your boy, as I'll tell my boy, when they're growing up about this bloke called Colin McRae.
Yeah, yes, and unfortunately that sometimes happens when somebody passes away too early. The legend becomes greater than, you know, greater than ever. We obviously, Henry Toivonen, we still all remember so fondly of his driving, his flamboyant driving, and you know, spectacular antics on the World Championship as well, and the likes of Ayrton Senna, obviously, in Formula One. And you're right, we will tell stories of McRae for years. His, you know, his style was unique, and I don't think we'll ever see anybody drive a rally car at World Championship level like he did. And obviously the technology at the time allowed it and almost demanded it. And he could drive a car more spectacular than anybody else, but still get a stage time out of it at the end of the day. So the cars that he drove were iconic as well. You know, they'll live on, his memories will live on, and like you said, we'll all carry on telling the stories for a long time yet.
Jack, you're you know, I've just used Ryan and myself, obviously we're a little bit older than you, Jack, and you know, I always think about, you know, telling my boy stories and stuff like that. Do you think when, I know it sounds like an odd question, but when you're kind of a little bit older and things like that, do you think you'll still be telling stories of Colin? Do you think your generation, with all due respect, will you go to Loeb or will you go to Colin? You know, it's a funny one, isn't it? You know, do you think it'll keep growing?
Yeah, I think it'll keep growing. I don't think anyone's captured the essence of rallying like Colin has. I think that's why we're still talking about him today, and why he's still celebrated so much. Everyone loves his, you know, his no nonsense attitude towards everything, and his really flamboyant style in the car, as you've already talked about. So he's one of them sort of mythical figures who will just continue to be celebrated so long after he's gone. And we see it in lots of other sports with people like that. There's always people who come along, like Ayrton Senna and Roundy Roundy, for example, that really capture the essence of what it's all about and really inspire people and force them to love what they're watching, and Colin was one of those people. So yeah, for me, he'll be forever the most famous and well-loved rally driver that there's ever been.
I think it's still to this day, I still have non-rally people who still talk to me and ask me about the Colin McRae rally game as well. Which, and again, there's a little part of me that still finds that, I find that a little bit frustrating, because I don't think it actually does anywhere near him justice, right?
What, the game?
Yeah,
the game
itself. Yeah, you know, to be remembered for a game, and you know, there's a group of people outside of rally fans that will remember him for the game as opposed to anything else.
Yeah,
and it doesn't do. Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, but in some ways that was a good thing, because it took rallying. It's a bit like the Lara Croft thing, isn't it? You know, like, some people did think Colin McRae was a mythical character, and we think that, and we saw him drive a rally car. But I think the great thing about that was it expanded his popularity, and it took him to people who didn't know anything about rallying. So yeah, you're right. It's maybe a little bit strange that people knew him through the computer game rather than through his actual rallying. But I think that was only a good thing. And again, if you think about in today's world, it's very difficult to imagine that happening now. You know, there's so many games out there, and you couldn't really imagine a Sebastien Ogier game, for example, becoming so big that he was famous virtually more so with some people than in actual the actual world championship. So you know, it was a unique time. PlayStation was in its infancy, and you know, I think it's great that rallying did reach out through that PlayStation game to a whole new market.
No, absolutely. Jack Benyon, thank you for sharing your thoughts as well. We'll go to your any other business, mate.
My any other business is you mentioned Chris Meek earlier on, right? Still seeing lots of tweets of people saying that Chris is very much missed in the WRC, and that he should be in a seat and all this kind of stuff. But I think we should be celebrating the Northern Irishman who's third in the WRC.
Good point. Carry on.
It's John Armstrong, if you've not worked out already, because he is currently third in the WRC Esports Championship that's going on this year, which is in its third year. And there's a new teams championship this year. John races for, well, rallies for WRC E-Drivers Club, and they're leading the teams championship. So every time there's a rally, between Thursday to Sunday, they do two stages, try and set the fastest time. And then at the end of the event, whoever's gone quickest is the winner. So John is third, and is 32 points off the lead of the championship with six rallies to go. It follows the WRC calendar, so it gets to Australia, and then there's one big event at the end of the year, which is yet to be kind of confirmed and more information given about it. But very very good to see John. I thought about him this time of year, and I did text you boys to say we should get John on the show. You know, he's been on the show many times before. But his performance in Rally Germany with his prize drive last year in WRC 2 was pretty spectacular. It didn't quite go perfectly to plan. There was a few mistakes along the way, but on DMAT tyres, which are not the best on tarmac, John was, you know, he set a fastest time in WRC 2. So,
I'm sorry, you're wrong about the tyres.
Oh, sorry. I did specify on tarmac.
Okay. Sorry, go on, carry on.
No, that's absolutely fine. So yeah, he was very impressive in Germany as well. So this time of year, last year, we had John getting his big break, and this year he's not had so much luck and hasn't really done so much rallying, but he's doing very well in the eSports Championship. And we've seen a lot of these eSports Championships in motorsport, sorry to talk about round and round again, but some of them being monetized and people starting to actually make salaries and make big money out of eSports. So hopefully the eSports WRC can go the same way, and people like John will be rewarded, even if they can't make the top level, they don't have the budget or the way he's in, if you like. Hopefully they'll be able to do it through being successful in things like eSports.
Let's try and get John on next week. Ryan Champ, you're running with the business.
well, I've had a message from John Armstrong since we started recording this show, funnily enough.
And there you go.
Do you
need to do some setup work for him?
Who knows? Maybe we're working on a little project together that we'll talk about at some point. My any other business this week starts with something that ties in a couple of things that we've talked about this week, both Subaru and Colin McRae, because it's 25 years ago to the day that Colin won Subaru's first World Rally and his own first World Rally in New Zealand. Of course, there's the famous story that ProDrive had the Impreza ready to go, but the Japanese been very honourable people. They said, you know, they didn't want the new Impreza using until the Legacy won a rally, because they didn't want it to be seen as a failure. And luckily, Colin won New Zealand, so the Impreza was debuted as planned in Finland. But 25 years ago today, like I say, and Colin won the rally after a very close battle with Francois Delacour, who was in the Escort Cosworth course at the time, and he was just 2 seconds in front of Didier Auriol in the Celica. So you had a very close top three after 6 hours of rallying, so much longer event than we see now. And McRae, Delacour and Auriol, as I said, separated by less than 30 seconds. And Carlos Sainz was in fourth in the famous Jolly Club Lancia, the Repsol Lancia that he didn't have a particularly successful year with, but I think we all love the colour scheme of that car. My final any other business this week is, and some people have seen this on Twitter, the new Cayman GT4 that's been built for Roman Dumas to drive. I think he's driving it in Germany as maybe a course car or something like that. But interestingly, Porsche Motorsport officially tweeted this afternoon to say that the Cayman GT4 is just a concept for rallies, but we'll collect feedback from the rally scene and a decision will be made if a similar car based on a future model may be developed later.
Oh,
that'd be cool, wouldn't it? An officially developed Porsche for rallying.
We know somebody who can drive a Porsche as well.
Well, Roman Dumas seems to go quite well.
We did a story about this in MN not so long ago, in last month. And yeah, Dumas was very positive about the car. He's been testing it, so he's got a little bit of experience behind the wheel of the car. Give us some good quotes, I remember. And he's going to be the zero car in Germany. So you were right about that, right?
At least we were right about something this week.
Yeah, well, that was lucky, wasn't it?
We scraped by.
Dumas' own team's going to run it as well, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, obviously with close backing from Porsche, you know, Porsche to put an official tweet out like that with pictures of the car.
Oh,
good.
Yeah, definitely.
But it means they're showing interest in rallying, which is definitely a good thing.
And so say all of us. Boys, that is the end of this section. Well done. You've got the rest of the podcast off, per you.
Thank you. We need the rest. We need the rest. After all all the difficulties and everything we get wrong, it's hard, isn't it?
It is. Jack, will you be okay? Do we need to send some help or?
What for?
I'm just checking.
Your mental state. We're worried about you.
I'm very well at the minute, I think. Good.
That's all right. Cool. Are you around next week, Ryan Champion?
I will be around next week.
I'm getting really thrown by how much he's around, Jack.
I know, it's a bit weird, isn't it?
It is unusual.
It feels a bit eerie, the fact that he's around. It must throw your missus massively. Gemma massively.
Yeah, I think so. And the really scary thing is I haven't got a flight booked currently to go anywhere, and that's not good. That's not a good situation.
Jack, have you any flights booked anywhere?
Yeah.
Oh, get you.
Well, he's international roundy-roundy journalist, isn't
he? Of course he is, yeah. I always forget about that. I always forget about that. Anyway.
I wish I could.
Yeah. So are you around next week?
I am.
All right, cool. Should we reconvene next week, boys, before Germany?
Someone's not killed me, yeah. Ryan Champion's going to turn up at my house and stick a bullet between my eyes, I think.
Oh, dear.
International man of mystery, assassin for hire.
Well, yeah. No, well, I won't shoot you. I'd go for the people who are after you.
Oh, thanks.
We've got your back, Jack. We've got your back.
Of course.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Feels a bit odd.
Team absolute rally and all that.
I can't believe you just said that publicly. You know, like that might, people might hold that against you now.
We're waffling, boys. Let's wrap this up. Folks, if you have not entered the competition yet, the Kielder, please get your answers in. I keep mentioning this all the way through the podcast. I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but the design of the mugs are complete. They are amazing, and they will only be available to people who get this question right. You can't buy them from We the Terrors. They've been specifically designed for this particular competition, so they will be very, very special.
Finley will be emailing his answer a little bit later on.
studio@absoluterally.co.uk, Finley. You'll be fine. You get your answers in there. So that's it. You boys can have the rest of the podcast off. We've got Phil Hall, who sat with Tom Williams on Rally Finland. He's done some other bits and pieces in Paraguay and New Zealand and everything else this year. And then we've got Matt Cotton, who's talking to us about PR on events and things like that at the end of the podcast. And then we all go home. So that's the way it's going to work. So, boys, same time, same place next week.
See you then.
Absolutely.
I look forward to it. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Get connected. Check out the website, absoluterally.co.uk. Find us on Facebook, Absolute Rally. Follow us on Twitter, @absolute_rally. All the latest updates and news, plus much more. Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Have you figured out the noise of the rally car yet? Do you know what it is? Please, studio@absoluterally.co.uk, because these mugs are mega. I keep going on about it. I know I do, but we put loads of effort in, and Dan the Wee, the Terrors, has not let us down. Anyway, we've mentioned, obviously, our drivers that we have in WRC that we're looking after. Obviously, we have Tom Williams, we've got Gus Greensmith in WRC too, but I thought I'd mix it up a little bit. Rather than have Tom on this time after Rally Finland, we thought we'd get his co-driver on. Actually, a co-driver that also co-drove for me many, many years ago. Sorry, mate, make you sound really old now, but Phil Hall, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Hello.
It's a while. You have actually been on the program, but it was many, many years ago.
Yeah, 2015, I think, was the last time I spoke.
And you've been counting down the days till we got you back on again.
Every single one, of course.
Right, so you've been home now from Finland for a week. I assume stress levels and everything else, everything that goes with co-driving on such an amazing event, they've all subsided and you've managed to relax a little bit. I'm guessing it's been dead easy, hasn't it?
This last week's been pretty good, yeah, just relaxing after Finland. To be fair for us, Finland wasn't that massively stressful because it's an event I've done a few times now, and Tom and I had a look at it last year as well. So it was a good event around for us. But yeah, this week's been back on the fitness, back on trying to wind down and prepare for the next round, which is Turkey. But it's been a nice week not to be doing too much rallying.
How are you finding the Junior World Rally Championship this time round? You know, I had Mattix talking about on Bex's excellent podcast, of course, on Regroup, he was talking about the group of drivers there, obviously very, very close, but by the same token, there's an intensity, obviously, because you all want to win or you all want to achieve something out of this. How are you finding having, you know, people around you from different nationalities, etc., all in the same car, but obviously all on the same journey?
It's a really good opportunity for us to just see where we're at and push ourselves and reach the next level of pace. Yeah, they're a really good group of guys that we're competing against. Guys like Raz from and Terry Falb and Franceschi, they're all really, really nice guys, and they're really, really fast. There's a really good opportunity for us to sort of gauge ourselves against them. The championship's so intense this year. And it's nice to see that we're sort of slowly working our way, not that slowly actually, working our way up the rankings, six in Finland, which is our best result to date. So as a group of people, the 15 guys in it, we all work together, and we all compete quite strongly against each other as well. It's a really nice atmosphere.
JWRC, obviously you have done rounds of it before. I don't think you've done a full championship before, have you?
So I did, I haven't done the Junior World Championship as an entity before. I did the Drive DMAC Fiesta Trophy back in 2016,
right.
Which I did the full season, but it wasn't the JWRC back then. It was when JWRC was run by Citroen that year.
Yeah.
But this event, I think, was something like my 17th or 18th WRC start.
Wow.
And hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have ticked off the 20th one. Which wherever that may be, but yeah, it's nice to start coming over the events again. So this is my third time at Finland, third time at Rally Australia was last year. So you're starting to get a feel for the venue, you're starting to get a feel for the stages. And even though they change them around quite a lot, you can feel that it's quite comfortable going back to these places. But then it's nice to get a new place. Like I went to Mexico this year, which is a place I've never been to that sort of area of the world. So it was really good to keep adding new places to the list.
We were quite excited because obviously I worked a little bit with Tom on getting him over to Mexico, and obviously yourself as well. So we were really excited when it was announced. Obviously, we love working with David as well, and you know we're just massive fans of what David's done in the past, and obviously of Tom as well when we have Tom on and things like that. And it's a very unique journey. And it to be fair, I was thinking about this because I was thinking about when you know we'll get Phil on. I was thinking about all these kind of different things about what we could, you know, what I wanted to ask you about, and what I wanted to talk to you about. And you've just mentioned, yeah, I didn't realize, I'm sure obviously you do because you're obviously doing it. I wasn't aware of how many WRC rounds you've done yet. You must be in a quite unique place, and I think Tom will be in not too dissimilar soon, in that you'll have done more WRC rounds than you will kind of British Rally Championship rounds. Which is quite unique, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's odd because my CV now, I've already done more international events than I've done in the UK. Maybe not WRC to BRC, but you know, stuff I've done in the UK compared to stuff I've done overseas, including the stuff in America, Canada, South America, and Australia, New Zealand, is well above what I've done nationally. And that's just a balancing. That's the way my career went. It wasn't necessarily an intentional thing. I was just competing sort of a national level up to 2014. And then I got these opportunities to go overseas. And obviously with the Toyota program, that was all overseas. So that was a lot, that big chunk of that is the Toyota program. So it wasn't something that was intentional. And likewise with Tom, I think he decided to go overseas as well. It is a bit of a unique situation to be in. I'm not sure how many other people are in it. But yeah, it's something that's quite exciting to me. I always wanted to use rallying as a means to see the world and travel and see new experiences. So I think maybe even though I've not consciously made that decision, any opportunity to go overseas to see things and compete has just sort of naturally drawn me to it.
Okay, we've talked about this before on the podcast. We've always had a rich vein of co-drivers, British co-drivers. I'm very careful not to just say English co-drivers if I get into trouble for that. But we've always had this kind of, you know, deep kind of rooted, you know, very, very experienced co-drivers from all the way back when, because, you know, going back to maps and stuff like that. Where do you take your inspiration from?
Well, likewise, you know, I started off, I think I must have been one of the last of the generation to do their first few stage rallies on maps. The very first Forest rally I ever did was off maps in a Mark II Escort in Sherwood Forest near where I live. So I did grow up around rallying in my younger years, around that kind of generation of co-drivers and drivers. I'm really fortunate that I'm surrounded by some really great co-drivers who helped me out through my time at the MSA Academy. Guys like Nicky Grist, he's supported me so much through my career, so he inspires me a lot. I speak to him so regularly, you know, around tricky events, new events I'm going to, what should I be looking for? He helps me a lot. Guys like Paul Spooner as well from the Academy have really helped me out. And likewise, I've also spoken to guys like Robert Reed, you know, David Connection and things like that. He's really helped me. So co-drivers like that who've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, can really help co-drivers like me who are still building their careers to understand what the next step is or how to be a better co-driver overall, particularly guys like Nicky, who's just been phenomenally helpful to me throughout my career.
So this year, you know, you've mentioned about the travel. Obviously, we're friends on social media and things like that. So I see the updates, and you know, I've seen Paraguay, I've seen New Zealand, and places like that. Now, I'm going to ask you a question that you probably weren't expecting to be asked. We've had this bit of a thing going on the podcast over the last, probably this season, about talking about what's going on over on, you know, Australia and New Zealand with regards to AP4 and AP4 Plus, of course, in New Zealand. How comparable are those cars to an R5 car you've sat in?
So the car I competed in New Zealand was an AP4 Plus car, so it was slightly higher capacity than normal AP4 cars, but it was also the grandfather car. It was the original car they built as a sort of a demo car to design this type of car around. So it's quite old as well. I mean, Reese Gardner, he drives it really, really well, but it's not the most modern one. So my experience with the AP4 cars isn't the absolute maximum level, but what I've seen is they're starting to get there. They're really starting to get towards R5 levels of performance. There's a lot of experience out there in how to build cars, and there's a lot of understanding and really good drivers. So the development work's going really well. And it's nice to see there's a lot of manufacturers involved over there. They've got an Audi built. They've got numerous Mazdas. There's a Holden as well, and I'm probably forgetting another two or three at least, as well as the sort of Fiesta R5s over there, and I know there's Fabia R5s as well.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to sit in the Skoda R5 in Paraguay, as you've already mentioned. So the direct comparison between the Fabia R5 and the AP4 Plus that I sat in New Zealand, and given the caveat that the AP4 Plus is a significantly older car, that car was, the Fabia was incredible, really, really great car to sit in, really modern, handled really, really well, lots of power and acceleration. The Mazda was more like a Group A car, lots and lots of torque, big 2.3 turbo engine, but a little bit more agricultural maybe.
Okay.
To strike into the corners a lot. So, they are getting there with the more modern ones. The 1.6 turbo AP4 cars are definitely getting up there with the R5 cars, but I don't have the experience of them, unfortunately.
Okay. I won't put you on the spot about it then. I won't put you on the spot about it anymore. The rest of the year, you've just said, obviously, you know, you'll have clicked 20 WRC events by the end of the year. I assume that the rest of this year for you is just looking at the remainder of JWRC and maybe obviously a couple of events just outside of that with Tom, or have you got any more travels planned?
That basically the plan is that we're going to finish JWRC. So we've got just got Turkey to go in the Junior World Championship. Potentially we've got some extra events going on. But Tom, we'll have to see what happens after Turkey, I think. It's one of my favourite rallies. It's a nice way to end the year. So I'm looking at what I can do to get out to that. But whether I'm competing or not, I'm not really sure at the moment.
All right, sorry, we lost you for a split second then. I'm assuming I'm going to insert Rally GB.
Obviously, I'd love to do Rally GB this year, but we'll just have to see what happens after Rally Turkey. I think that's the one we're really focusing on is the final round of the JWRC, and then we'll go from there. It would be nice to do a couple more rounds of the WRC towards the end of the year.
Oh, well, fingers crossed for you. Fingers crossed. Listen, Phil, I just wanted to get you on to get a different perspective, really, from the other side of the car. Obviously, we have had Tom on before, and we'll have Tom on again. So, Turkey, what's happening now to get ready for Turkey? Obviously, a bit of fitness and things like that, which you've already mentioned. Do you and Tom get together? Do you start watching on board soon? How does it work?
So, it's great to work with Tom. Tom's one of the most driven drivers I've had the pleasure of working with. He's incredibly focused on what he wants to do. So the actual training for Turkey has already started. I'm going to be seeing him later this week. We'll have a bit of a chat and a catch up. We see each other fairly regularly. I travel down to Oxford or he comes up here. And from my point of view, I'm only looking at maps. I'm only looking at what videos I can find from previous events. They ran a candidate event last year. Tom, likewise, fitness-wise, it's going to be really, really hot and really, really rough. We already know that. So basically spending lots of time in the gym, lots of running, trying to make sure we're as conditioned as possible.
prefer the adverse conditions we know we're going to face.
Oh, well, absolutely. Listen, send our best to Tom. And as I say, we are keeping a watchful eye on you. And we will get you on again soon, okay?
Oh, thanks very much. It's always good to talk to you.
No worries at all. Folks, that was Phil Hall. We're going to go to a little break and then we're going to come back with Matt Cotton.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport. Developed from hands-on knowledge that you only get in the service park, not the boardroom. The range of Kielder cordless impact wrenches are designed to be compact, lightweight, feel good, and crucially, get the job done. Kits are available for less than £160. Plus, exclusively for Absolute Rally listeners, use discount code RALLY for 10% off at www.kielder.co. Simply search Kielder Tools online.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. Have you guessed the rally car yet? Have you figured it out? Have you figured out what the car is leaving service on the Kielder advert? Please, please, please keep emailing in. We had about 10 people batter us in literally, it was like going ding, 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 the emails coming in. And I can say that probably only 30% of the emails we've had in to answer it are correct. So that's all I'm going to say. We've got another couple of weeks to go. The final design, by the way, of the mug, which is done by Withy Terrors and Dan and the guys at Kielder, we've all worked together on it, looks absolutely mega, and it will be unique to this competition. Anyway, there you go. studio@absoluterally.co.uk. And listen out. Rewind it back. Listen again. Rewind it back. Listen again. You'll figure it out. I promise you. If you're a rally fan, of course you're going to figure it out. Ryan Champion took approximately 5 seconds, but we know he's an anorak. Speaking of anoraks, probably a harsh introduction now, but I'm going to bring a man who's not been on the podcast before, but we've been teammates many, many years ago, probably when we both had hair. I'm not entirely sure, but a very, very good friend of mine and a man now that looks after PR for various drivers and for events and for championships and things like that. And as ever, I always try to bring a slightly different spin of what goes on perhaps behind the scenes in rallying as well. So Matt Cotton, for not the last time, but certainly for the first time, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Thanks, Tony. Pleasure to be on.
It's good. Thank it's you. Good to have you on. Joking aside, we've known each other for a long time. We were teammates. Obviously, you competed. You've done British Championship and things like that. And then you made this big move into the world of PR. And I scratched my head. I'll be honest with you. But you just celebrated your first full year as being fully self-employed, not doing it as a sideline. This is how you're earning your living now. And in the world of social media and things like that, I'm assuming the job's changed from when you and I first started rallying and we'd have the conventional press release done and things like that. Yeah, how does it kind of work now? Because I haven't done anything like that for years, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Absolutely. I think probably the best way to describe it is sort of peaks and troughs. And ironically, actually, things do very much like fashion, not that I'm very aware of that, but, you know, things like fashion, it does come back around again. And I actually see a bit of a resurgence for things like, you know, full-blown press releases. And I know we've talked about this before between ourselves in as much as, you know, how things have changed and how much social media has come on. And I do think, and I was thinking about this before I came on air, in as much as I think we've gone all a bit social media fuzzy, if you know what I mean. So it's in front of us every day, all of the time, no matter where we look. We do it, look at in at work time, we look at it in our break times and evenings and the likes of, and we just get this blast of information pretty much all day flicking in front of us. And I think now it becomes so easy to miss stuff. And I do think there will be a place for, you know, the likes of the printed media, which perhaps a lot of people have forgotten about. And there's still some really good magazines and papers out there, which people are still buying and still getting hold of. And I do think that there could be a bit of a sign of that sort of coming back again, and a bit more focus going back on that as we sort of start to get a little bit fed up of social media. I don't know whether that's, you know, a controversial thing to say, but it's certainly the feeling that sort of I get at the minute.
No, I you know what? I'm kind of, I get annoyed with myself now looking at my phone and I still, despite what everybody thinks, Jack Benyon doesn't pull any strings for us. I still physically go out and search out on a Wednesday morning to get a copy of Motorsport News, because yeah. I've done it for the best part of 25, 30 years. And it would be odd for me not to do that on a Wednesday morning. It's just kind of how it feels. And I still like to have the paper in front of me and still open the pages and everything else. And I still look out for stories in there. And you and I both know probably most of those stories, in fairness to the printed press these days, have probably been on social media already.
Yeah, they have. You're absolutely right. And you do get occasionally where, you know, people will work with the publications to sort of do an announcement together on publication day and on social media. So it, you know, makes a good impact for the story. But inevitably, no matter how many times you publish that in a week or in a month, that you are going to be a little bit behind. But I think they do get that. I do see that sponsors are still seeing the value for money in printed media and for getting things in the paper and the likes of. And, you know, it used to be, maybe go back to when we were rallying and social media was really on the up and people were all interested in how many likes your page has got and things like that and how many followers you've got. But I don't see that at the minute as quite as important as perhaps it used to be. So, yeah, I think things are changing all the time and there's something else out there. There'll be something that isn't Facebook, that isn't Twitter, that's going to come along probably very, very soon that I think we're all going to have to jump aboard and try and work out, and we're going to have to adapt and we're going to have to change and we're going to have to all sort of figure out the best way of doing it. But I think the key message really is I think you've got to do a bit of everything, truthfully.
Do you think the other thing is, as well, as we all know how difficult it is to get stuff into written publications, you know, putting something out on Twitter or on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, obviously I think it has its place. And, you know, I love how a lot of drivers have kind of took it on board now, you know, obviously, you know, WRC drivers kind of all the way down, that they kind of set the bar, and you've got, you know, guys doing, you know, little videos, Instagram or on, you know, Facebook Live or wherever it may be. There's definitely a kind of place for that, almost a guerrilla type media, I suppose, isn't it? Where it's, you know, it isn't carefully, you know, got a cameraman there and stuff like that. 9 times out of 10, it's somebody grabbing the phone, almost a glorified selfie kind of recording it. Whereas what you're talking about there is it's very much planned. It's not, you know, you're speaking to an editor or whatever, and you're making that effort to get something in. So whatever you get in has got to be, there's got to be a level of quality to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have a structure to it. And I think probably the most important thing is to have a relationship. And again, we go back to that. I keep comparing it to social media, but people don't have relationships with social media. People don't have relationships with a press release post on social media. But if you've got to go out and you've got a sponsor to please in your local area, the best thing that you can possibly do is have a really good relationship with your sports editor that's maybe a few miles away, that you can pick up the phone to and say, look, I've got a press release coming out this week. It's really good news. You know, is there something we can do? Can you take them out for a cup of coffee? Can you have a chat with them? And relationships do build coverage. It's as simple as that. And I've proved it myself. The ones that I know, the people that I know in publications that I know, will inevitably help you out a bit more, are more inclined to be putting that stuff out there than just random, you know, press releases or information or snippets to just somebody that you've never met or never spoke to on the phone. So it is really important that relationship side of it, the networking side of it. The more people that you can speak to and get out there and chat to, it's so much better, so much better indeed.
Does it help? I know this sounds like a very obvious question, but it's not really. I've kind of put a bit of thought into it. I always try to, Matt. In that, you know, let's you look at somebody like, we have Reece Yates, of course, on the program last month. And, you know, that's somebody you work with and you look after and things like that. And, you know, everything you've just described there, obviously he's doing ERC, he's doing British Championship, he's been doing other events and things like that to support it. And then you've got drivers perhaps at the, you know, the lower end of the scale of, you know, doing maybe a local national championship or whatever it may be. does it really matter to the local guys, you know, whether he's doing ERC or whether he's doing the local national championships? You think the newspapers, you know, the local ones and things, do you think they really care? Do you think they really get it still?
No.
I didn't think so either. I'm glad you said that.
No, I don't. And they wouldn't know how significant the European Rally Championship is compared to the, you know, ASWMC Southwest Championship. They can't make that connection like we all can. And whilst we can sit there and we certainly know the difference between driving around perhaps an airfield and going and tackling stages in Italy, at the end of the day, they get a piece of information with a picture of a car on it, and the photo from Italy might look a bit better than the one from the single venue, perhaps round a bale. But in essence, the story is the same. And you might be lucky enough, you know, to grab it on a slow news day or a slow news week, in as much as there's no football going on and, you know, there's no latest darts happening at the minute. And you might be lucky enough to get a snippet in there. But you are fighting for that all of the time. And that's why I go back to the relationships, in as much as you need to kind of excite these people. You need to, because they don't get it. They don't get rallying. They don't get, probably to a certain degree, they don't get motorsport. So you need to go and excite them and give them a bit of your passion, if you like.
Okay. Now, on the more grander scale, I suppose, you're looking after an individual. These days, you're looking after the Scottish Rally Championship, as an example, and you're looking after events. How different is that? What's the relationship that you have to build then? You know, is the relationship more with local business and getting them on board to work with it, or is it, you know, local residents that are going to have, you know, they're going to perhaps have their driveway blocked for a period of time or whatever? How does that kind of work?
Yeah, you're right. I think the difference, the main difference with the event is that there's a massive cross section of people that are all scrabbling for information. So as you mentioned, it could be a local resident, or it could be a spectator, or a one time a year spectator as well. Let's face it, there's not many rallies that maybe come to the southwest of Scotland, for example. So, you know, there's going to be this resident in this part of the area that is only ever going to see one rally a year, so they're going to need to know as much information about that as possible. And you're going to have to spoon feed them with that. So it's all about, it's a very different audience, in as much as you have to put it in very simplistic terms. Gone are the days when you and I would plot a map reference and go and watch a special stage with a map reference and go and find a car park and do it that way. It has to be a very different approach for these guys. And of course, on a local level as well, many of these towns see these rallies as probably one of the biggest sporting events that they have in the year. And that's the case in certainly a couple of rounds of the Scottish Rally Championship. You know, this is a really, really big thing for them. And they get the local community behind it, and it's very much pushed from a local level. So it's important to be able to have everything to hand and all that information sort of available for everybody, so that they can either plan the day or know what's going on, or indeed, as you say, not get their driveway blocked.
Well, obviously, you're a rally man at heart, but I call it roundy, Matt. I can't help it. We give Jack a bit of a hard time about it, but
can't do that anymore.
I'm sorry, my mate. I've got to. We're staying true to our. It's absolutely rally at the end of the day, but you are now probably just as much, if not more so, involved in kind of British touring cars and things like that, working with drivers there and teams there as well.
Yeah, we do. We've got an involvement with an insurance company that sponsors some touring cars, which is great. And we do a bit of work for the Amigos team, who are in the Porsche Carrera Super Cup at the minute, which is obviously a TOCA package as well. So yeah, it is roundy. And I was very skeptical at the beginning a couple of years ago, I have to say, and it was a bit of a toe in the water exercise for us, but I do have to say I very, very much enjoy the TOCA package and the going roundy, as you call it. I mean, it's a very different animal. You don't have to take wellies and waterproofs and things like that, and you know, the toilets are readily available, but
that's one thing. Toilets are always readily available. You just got to be a bit skeptical about the paper that you use when you're in the woods.
Yeah, and who else is watching that?
are you a VIP now, Matt? Are you in the VIP area?
No,
okay.
No,
that makes me feel a bit better.
No, we don't get that. We still stand at the bottom of the stairs looking at all the people going up into the VIP areas, wondering what it's like. No, not at all. We're very much at the lower end of that food chain. But equally, you know, they've got a fantastic thing going on there. The promotion is great. There's a fantastic buzz about it. And I think having so many people in one sort of fairly small area, the atmosphere is pretty unique. And unfortunately, we do lack that a little bit in rallying. And it's one thing that is hard to address, unfortunately.
Okay, I'm going to just before we wrap up, as a man with rallying at heart, who's been a driver, a scrutineer, obviously he's been with teams and everything else, you've just touched upon something there. How do we regenerate that particular kind of energy into rally? Is it where the service area is? Is it town centre starts? Is that really that important?
$1 million question. I still think no matter how impressive the promotion is, and quite clearly things like the WRC have stepped up in terms of that, and certainly, you know, looking closer to home at Wales Rally GB, the promotion for that is outstanding. It really is fantastic. But we still have this little need that we do want to hide ourselves away a little bit. And I still can't get over that. I think the town centre stuff is massively important. We still need to be bringing rallying to the people. And we mentioned the Scottish Championship earlier, and that's one almost mandatory thing that series does. And I think every fairly big rally needs to do is take the rally to the people, get it into town centres. Logistically, it's a nightmare. Organising health and safety, getting the councils involved, it can be very, very difficult. But I think that is going to be the only inspiration that we can do on the ground to get these people back into the forest, to regenerate the spectators in there, to get the income back in for the rally. It's one big circle, one really big circle. And I think a very easy thing to do with that respect would be to take the rally into the towns a bit more if we can.
I've cheated a little bit. I've got one more little thing then. As a new daddy, right, and I've just been having this conversation, obviously my little boy's 9 months old, I would love him to get involved in rallying and everything else, but he is my son, obviously. I've got proof now from Jeremy Kyle, he is my son. Anyway, I'm joking, Heather, if you listen. But if my overseas listeners, just Google it, because I think Jerry Springer. Anyway, where I'm going with this is that it's natural because I've got history, I'd like to think, albeit very little bit of history in the sport, and my background is in the sport and everything else. So he is my offspring. Now, my dad wasn't interested in rallying. I just so happened to stumble across the sport and fell in love with it and everything else. How do we get, you know, not necessarily bloodlined relatives, if you like, into the sport? How do we get new people into the sport?
Second $1 million question. Does that make it a $2 million question?
It does make it a $2 million question. Absolutely, Matt. Well done. Your maths are working well.
Yeah. Putting me on the spot, Tony. Even more difficult, I think, to be honest. I know, you know, it's been talked about quite a lot how we, you know, energise the youth of today and you know, the drifting culture is very strong, and the show and shine and the modified performance car stuff is amazingly strong. And it's trying to harness these people and shove. It's always going to be difficult. Look, at the end of the day, we're asking people more often than not to go and throw themselves into a forest at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It's piddling down with rain and it's muddy and there's no facilities around. So it's always going to be difficult. I don't know. I genuinely don't know the answer to that question. I think it's going to be a long process, which probably goes hand in hand to what I was talking about before, actually. You know, I think a lot of people do end up stumbling across rowing from sort of the WRC down. And it's just trying to inspire them and get them out to watch a rally at sort of club level, if you like. But it's immensely difficult, Tony. I think you know that, really.
No. I was hoping you had all the answers, Matt. I just put the podcast on. I was hoping you were going to give us the definitive and then we could wrap up. But literally, I could throw a line on this podcast, but still, there you go. Anyway,
you
my friend.
Press record and hope it works.
Yeah, anyway, you're off somewhere as you are normally every weekend. Where are we this weekend?
Yeah, we're in Aberdeen, so it's the penultimate round of the Scottish Rally Championship at the Grampian Forest Rally. So it's a good one, good entry, fairly healthy, I think sort of 95 odd cars, and I think the championship's coming down to a pretty intense title fight, so it'll be a good rally. Looking forward to it.
And who are the runners? I'm assuming Mr. Armstrong, Jock Armstrong's up there fighting for it, and we've got a couple of R5s up there.
He's had a really unfortunate year, so he's pretty much out of the title fight. Andrew Gallagher is in a ex-Mark Higgins Focus WRC, actually, one of the old Stobart cars.
With the lovely Jane Nicol sat alongside. I've seen some of Jane's posts.
So it's really between Andrew and a guy called Donny McDonald, who's in a R5 Plus as well. So,
my friend and yours, Jamie, sat in, I believe.
Yeah, he is.
There you go, Jamie Edwards, Rally for Wales as well. There you go. He's come back full circle. There you go.
International, you see.
We will watch it. We will watch, of course. Well, listen, mate, thank you so much for coming on and kind of talking to us about this stuff. Again, I always like to try and do different angles about rallying and not necessarily always the obvious stuff as well. So congratulations, of course, on your first full year as well, of course, in the business and taking that plunge. It is very difficult, and I take my hat off to you. Well done.
Thank you, mate.
There you go. Folks, listen, that is the end of this week's episode. Again, please get involved with the competition with the Kielder advert and what rally car it is. It's mega, and the mugs are mega. We finalised the design yesterday, so I can't wait. I genuinely can't wait. I can't even get one. That's the worst thing. Matt can't have one either because he's not entering the competition. So there you go. Anyway, that was Matt Conn. Matt, what's the best way of searching you out, my friend, if people want to look at what you're up to and maybe even talk to you about doing stuff?
Yeah, no problem. MCR Motorsport Media. Just pop that into Google on social media and we'll pop up somewhere.
There you go. That's how easy it is. Folks, we will be back same time in your little podcast hole this time next week.
Absolute Rally. Powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.